Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Oh, bedapple the light of my mind. Let shade and atoms swirl in pint-glass spectrums of the past. Bring forth cool breezes of wood smoke and grass, and bring the laughter of a distant field, and bring me into the moon underwater. Welcome, everyone. And I have to say, Robin, I almost didn't make it through the door today.
Why is that? Lost your key?
No. There were so many particles of desire outside that I almost couldn't get through the buggers.
Oh, really? They manifested.
There was just almost a force field of desire.
Bloody hell.
Have you ever wanted something so much that it's almost impossible when it's there right in front of you to grasp it?
Do you think desire... So desire's physically manifested itself and it's caused a blockage.
So the desire particles that form the very foundations of the moon underwater, they're usually pretty disparate. You don't need many of them to create a pub.
Yeah.
But sometimes you just get little sort of bottlenecks of desire.
What happens when you try and get through them then?
It's like pressing two magnets together when they're at the wrong end of the scale. You know what it's like when a magnet's at the wrong end of the scale.
Is it like pushing through a crowd in a busy city?
Yes, very much so. If the crowd was made up of people that are tiny and invisible.
Mm.
I mean, research into particles of desire is at a very early stage.
It is.
They're trying to fire them round an enormous pub in Switzerland.
The Large Hadron Collider.
Trying to see if they can crash two particles of desire together at enough speed to actually bring forth pubs.
Oh, yes.
And then, in theory, you could then generate infinite pubs with very low carbon emissions.
Is that the creation myth of pubs, then? A pub comes into being when two particles of desire collide in the Large Hadron Collider.
Well, I think current studies show that at the Big Pub Bang... At the Big Pub Bang about 2,000 years ago, all the pubs that exist today were created.
Right.
They just hadn't sort of coalesced.
Okay.
Because you can't...
So I suppose it's like all... There's no such thing as new matter, is there? You can't make something from nothing. So in a way, pubs have always existed.
Well, since 2,000 years ago, I think it was when either Christ was born or died, there was the Big Pub Bang. And all of the pubs that currently exist... were just spread forth amongst the world.
Right.
But they didn't know themselves.
They didn't know they were pubs.
No. So anyway, how are you?
Oh, yeah. I'm good. I'm really good, actually, John. Yeah, I'm feeling... Well, no, I'm all right. I'm awful, actually. Terrible.
Terrible. That went downhill
quickly.
Yeah, it
did, yeah. A bit...
But how can you feel awful in the sat here in the moon underwater?
Well, that's true. I suppose I can never feel awful in here, really. You know, a bit of a hangover. But in the moon underwater, a hangover is kind of inverted.
Oh, I don't mind that as a concept. So you actually feel better.
Yeah.
Clear-headed, able to remember things that people have just said, able to perform quite complex equations. But unfortunately, I missed mail. I missed the mist. Were you in when the mist man called?
Yeah, I sighed for the mist mail. So we've got some lovely correspondence here. So we got a lovely email in here from Graham, which is a bit of a correction. Hi, guys. Loving the cast. However, it is the tedious drawl of correction that motivates this correspondence. So this is to do with, do you remember in the Vic Hope episode we were talking about sparklers?
Yes.
Graham says, I am reliably informed by my ex-publican partner that, one, sparklers are fitted to the ends of pumps to enliven a cask ale for which tender loving care has been lacking. They will give a flat beer head. When I worked in a pub, they were mandated by the brewery owner, but the landlady made us take them off for regulars as the beer was well kept and in no need of artificial enlivening. Two, beers like John Smith's, Boddington's, etc. are stored in nitro kegs. It is the nitrogen which supplies the creamy texture. Put a sparkler on a nitro pump and you've got yourself a pint of head, mate. Anyways, I trust you are both well and that the inevitable increase in pub time does not delay the regular podcast episodes. Take care, Graham. So there we go. So he's saying that sparklers are only kind of used to enliven unlively beers.
I'm not denying the fact that that may have been used in Graham's partner's pub. I'm not denying that that may be how they're sometimes employed. But I don't think that's why, I don't think that's their only use.
Yeah. And definitely, there is a thing, if you're in the north or the northeast, you get a creamy pint. Get a creamy pint of Black Sheep. It's fantastic. And you can't get that down south.
I've been to pubs which pride themselves on supreme ale quality that use sparklers. So I'm looking it up now in my mind.
In your mind, yeah.
It just brings more CO2 in the head, resulting in a softer, sweeter flavour to the body due to the loss of normal CO2 acidity.
Right.
There is some dispute about the benefits of a sparkler. There is an argument that a sparkler can reduce the flavour and aroma, especially of the hops in some beers. The counter-argument is that the sparkler takes away harshness. So they may well be used to make a sort of beer that's on the turn slightly nicer tasting. I've certainly had beers poured with a sparkler, sometimes in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
Dukas with a sparkler is quite nice.
Ooh, yeah. But am I right in saying that creamy texture comes from a sparkler then?
The creaminess of the head does, yes. And I think what it's saying is that it has a softer flavour to it, slightly sweeter flavour. Sometimes when you see someone pulling a pint and they're doing it sort of achingly slowly, and you're like, please don't continue to do it at that speed, because you really want someone to, as a barmaid once said to me, give it some rice.
Yeah,
I think is a maybe a Brummy expression, sort of give it some welly, because that then really gets it going through.
Well, I remember this about the Harcourt Arms. John, the barman there, could pull a pint in two pulls. I don't know if that was the quality of John or the quality of his pump. If you've got an answer to that, if you're John, not this John, email in.
Yeah. Also, if your local uses sparklers, do let us know, because I love hearing about beers poured through sparklers. And also, all beer pumps, or loads of them, have little threads at the end, so they're sort of designed to be able to add them onto, aren't they?
Yeah.
There's stories of people who like bring their own to pubs, isn't there? Sort of real.
That's insane. Yeah. But surely there must be a kind of anti-sparkler contingent as well. From the tone of Graham's email.
Yeah, I think in those sort of dark recesses of the camera membership, there are probably lots of for and against camps for various things.
I bet there is a beer web forum where people talk about sparklers and it's about 50 pages long, you know.
Yeah, and I can't wait to read it.
Yeah.
And folks, if you would like to have your correspondence sighed for and delivered by the mist mail, then you could write to us at john@moonunderpod.com. And just a reminder that if you have been overindulging of late and fancy a non-alcoholic beverage, then do go to drydrinker.com and use the code MoonUnderPod to get 20% off, which is a sizable amount of percent. It's a large percentage off a very small percentage, because they're mostly 0.5 or 0.3% or 0.0%. And also, if you would like to gain access to a really quite thrilling bonus podcast, Behind the Cellar Door, then you can head to Patreon at patreon.com/moonunderpod to choose your level of exposure to our extra content. but an upcoming episode of Behind the Cellar Door, where we remove the mirror of sorrow from the wall and open the cellar door and go down into it and chat to each other, does feature live pub audio.
Well, I was quite literally standing next to John as he was broadcasting into his phone by the Thames. It was quite amazing to see.
Yeah, just trying to soak up some of the atmospheres of pubs.
Yeah, the approaches, the reveals, the thoughts, the feelings.
The thoughts, the feelings, but never recording inside the pub itself because
no,
the pub is hallowed ground and you don't want to be looked like two twerps making a weblog on your phone. Yeah. Right then, I need to really pay some attention to this block of desire particles outside the front door because I really don't want our guest this evening to get into any trouble or to think that we've sort of put a spell on the door.
Yeah, no, that's the last thing we want.
No, we want her to be able to gain swift entry to the moon underwater. So I'll get to that now. Rob, if you could lay down a nice selection of beer mats.
Sure.
Because I know it's one of your pet peeves that not enough pubs have beer mats these days.
Yeah, we've got an infinite supply.
We certainly do. Infinite beer mats and infinite desire. Right, I'm off to do that, and we'll see her very soon. Oh, Robin, I've just been down to the cellar. There was a fervency in the air down there.
Fervency?
Yeah, a real fervency. And now, looking out of the window, the bowed window, have you noticed that the wood smoke from chimney upon chimney has turned the alleyways into misty bogland?
Yeah, well, now you mention it. Yeah, I did notice earlier just that there were definitely thunderous sparks from the dark of the pub.
Yes!
Before the smoke you mentioned.
Those silent sparks that emit from the pub's aura.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think maybe we should give it a good clean.
Yeah, possibly. But it feels like it might be getting to the roaming hour.
Yes, now, hang on, let me just check one of the 80 clocks. Yes, it is the roaming hour, and I believe that this evening we're due a guest to join us within the pub. Maybe that's why the wood smoke from chimney upon chimney has just begun to swirl, as if revealing someone to us, Sam.
Yes, it's hypnotic.
It is hypnotic. And it's portentous. Oh, yes, the door. It's the door. And who's that? It's beer writer in excelsis, Emma Inch. Hello, Emma. Come in.
Hello there. Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, Emma, it is a delight here at the Moon Underwater to welcome, and I'm not going to spare your blushes, a member of the British Guild of Beer Writers and a British Beer Writer of the Year, as well as host of the Fermentation Beer and Brewing Radio podcast. What you don't know about beer isn't worth knowing, Emma.
Absolutely not.
And we're delighted to welcome you to the Moon Underwater this evening to create your dream pub. I wondered, Emma, do you spend a lot of time dreaming about the perfect pub?
Oh, well, I do at the moment. You know, it's something that has gained more of a mythical status than it already had, really. You know, this idea of something perfect. I'm not entirely sure that the perfect pub actually exists, apart from yours, obviously, in a kind of an ongoing way. I think it's like these fleeting glances we get of the perfect pub.
When you're going to a new pub to try a new beer, because you also sort of write little, well, I'm going to quote from one of them because it's such extraordinary writing. Do you still get that feeling that this could be the one? This could be the pub that I just want to come back to again and again.
I mean, I get that a lot. And I think, you know, we've all had that experience where you have, you know, I think the perfect pub is unexpected. You know, it's that bumping into a friend in the street and saying, do you fancy a quick pint? Or, you know, some mates saying, we found this really good new place, let's take you to it. And, you know, it's somewhere you don't expect to be. You've popped in for something, you realise there's a quiz on, you think, oh God, I don't really want to do the quiz, but you think, oh well, let's join in. You end up having the most riotous night you've ever had. It's so hard to recreate that when you go back. Even if you go to the same pub with the same people, something is lost in the moment. But that's still exciting because it means something can be found elsewhere when you least expect it.
Mine and John's favourite ever pubs is the Dagda in Edinburgh. And the first time I went there, It was just literally, I was with my friend Dave during the Fringe, and I'd often walk past it and wasn't really sure about it because it sort of looks like one of those crystal shops that you see in Glastonbury that sells tarot cards kind of from the outside. And I thought, oh, I've never actually been in here. Should we try it? And then like, oh my God, the next decade writ itself large.
Do you often find that those amazing, unexpected pubs, often they're from the outside, don't look like very much? And I wonder if the more a pub tries to say, this is a magical emporium of, and it's all Victorian writing and mock Tudor, and actually go inside and think, yeah. But when it's sort of quite a blank or odd-looking facade, sometimes you walk in and you're like, oh, I've walked past this so many times.
Absolutely. And I think it doesn't have to necessarily have to be beautiful or in some way heritage or anything like that. It can be the least, you know, sort of assuming kind of place. I remember going for just another unexpected night, met a friend. We suddenly decided we wanted to play darts. And we just opened the door to this pub that we thought, oh, that's got a dartboard. Found it had like, you know, six dartboards. Darts was its thing. And, you know, it wasn't a pretty place. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't somewhere that I would normally have chosen to go. You know, had these sort of formica floors and a very sort of utilitarian tables. And people went there to play darts. But the beer was really good. And, you know, the people were really friendly. We had, you know, the most stupid game of darts, missing the board and all that kind of thing. But it was just, you know, such an amazing place. I don't think we could recreate that. But yeah, pub doesn't have to be beautiful, I don't think. It doesn't have to be. It's not the way it looks. It's what on the inside that counts.
So we need to address a common love that we have, Emma, for Darkstar Brewery. And as soon as you arrived here at the Moon Underwater, I saw you wearing a Darkstar Brewery cap, which I also own. So I'm going to put my identical copy of the cap on.
Fantastic.
But I find myself in a situation I was once in a pub near me. Now, this pub had closed down and been refurbished, so once a lot of the sort of clamour of the new opening had finished, I went in to sort of check out what it was like. And I saw that on a pretty sort of average looking, more restaurant-y vibed bar, they had a single pump of Darkstar Hophead. And I literally went up to the bar and was like, oh my God, you've got Hophead on here. And he was like, yeah. And I said, I'll have a pint of Hophead. And he looked at me and he said, are you a bit of a fan then? And I went, yeah, I really like this beer. And he sort of looked at me slightly strangely, and I realised I was wearing my Darkstar cap and also, as I am now, my Darkstar hoodie. And I thought, I must look insane kind of coming into this restaurant and going crazy. So I took off my cap, and just as is about to happen now, just coincidentally, I took off my cap and I took off my hoodie to sort of pretend, oh yeah, I'll just put this away. And I was wearing a Darkstar Brewery t-shirt. So I walked up to this guy, like a sort of an American tourist in London with his Big Ben hat and his Big Ben coat and his Big Ben bum bag, but still had a gorgeous pint of Hophead.
Oh, you cannot beat Hophead. I mean, and it's, you know, it's just, it's so perfect for, you know, long afternoons in beer gardens that we'll hopefully be getting. It's low ABV. It's so drinkable. It's so, you know, living in Sussex as I do, you know, Darkstar is, you know, is one of my faves.
Well, I'm going to read, if you don't mind, something from an article you wrote about having a pint of Darkstar at the Evening Star in Brighton, which is such a great pub. And the way you write is so perfect because on the one hand, it's really knowledgeable and there's a lot of information. But on the other hand, it really sort of tugs at what I think Robin and I often discuss about that something extra that we expect from pubs and the odd pint. So do go to Emma's website. It's fermentationonline.com. And this is just from an article Emma wrote about a pint of this very beer we're discussing. It's rare that I order a pint nowadays. In a world where there are so many beers to try, I usually choose smaller measures, even of sessionable ales. But I always order a pint of Hophead, with its flash of elderflower aromas and just enough bitterness to clear the palate. It's a beer I've drunk in beer gardens over sunny afternoons and on ice-cold evenings with my cheeks pinched pink. It's a beer I've shared with friends and one I've sometimes had the luxury of drinking alone. It's the beer that puts me in mind of my hometown and the one I can almost feel on my top lip as my train pulls into the station. Some beers are polite. They fade pleasantly into the background as they accompany our conversations, never dominating, never shouting. Other beers push to the front, demanding to be heard, making sure you won't ignore them. But some of the best beers, like the pin-bright evening star hanging in a clear sky, or a familiar story repeated to fade, simply light your way home. Oh my God! That's so... I mean, I'm just there. Hairs on your neck go on end, and you know it's someone writing about having a pint in a pub, but there is magic in it.
But I mean, that's how important beer is. That, you know, and pubs, you know, they are important. They are magical. They do these things to us, and you know, as much as we might want to rationalise our way out of it, it's, you know, it's our taste, it's our memories, it is home. It's, you know, the warm arm round your shoulder and a comfortable seat. It's all those things that we need as human beings.
Lockdown was such a difficult time for pubs. But I wondered, as a beer writer and someone who knows a lot about the beer industry, were there positives for brewers? Because I'm just thinking, I've made more online beer orders in the last 6 months than I have in the previous 10 years. And I know about so many more breweries now than I did before. Have there been some positives for the way that breweries connect with people?
I think there has been for some. The key there was whether people had access to packaging, to small pack packaging. So if they had a canning line, which are very, very expensive, or if they were able to bottle at speed, which a lot of small breweries aren't, then yes, they made those direct connections with people who drank their beer. You know, some of them have kind of done okay and managed to kind of up their sales to, you know, you and I who put in beer orders and act surprised when another, you know, crate of beer comes through the door. But I think for other brewers who brewed mainly in cask, it's been an absolute unmitigated disaster because, you know, you can only buy cask in a pub. You can't recreate cask beer at home. You know, they didn't have the facilities. Canning lines take months to order and cost tens of thousands of pounds, and mobile canners were run off their feet, and they just didn't have the infrastructure to do it, really. And brewers have been a little bit left out of sort of the grants and the, you know, the sort of government help. So it's been really, really difficult for a lot of brewers. And the amount of beer consumed is, you know, although we feel like we've been drinking a lot at home, obviously most beer is drunk in the pub. So the amount of beer consumed has plummeted as well.
That is fascinating. I mean, speaking empirically from a personal point of view, it's quite the opposite for lockdown. But yeah, no, I suppose, I mean, that must be the case, obviously. Yeah, I mean, you just can't recreate the cask experience at home. You just cannot. That is something you can only get in a pub.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we've really missed out on that.
I spoke to the guy who founded drydrinker.com because I just sort of needed to keep a bit of a lid on drinking during lockdown, and found their range just blew my mind as someone who's always been interested in lower alcohol beers. The packaging they use, double boxed, and then it has dividers for each individual can and bottle. And he was saying the cost of that packaging is astronomical, and they wish that there was logistically a way of getting it back from the consumer because it protects the beer so well that then to just put it in your recycling is ridiculous. There's so many logistical elements that every brewery would need in place in order to make them sort of effective in a mail order scenario.
That's right. And I believe there's been a massive shortage of cardboard as well, which, looking at my recycling every week, I can well believe, you know, so much stuff being delivered.
And glass.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, it's a side issue. There's a documentary I once watched on a plane about the international glass shortage, which is terrifying. People steal sand from the desert in big tankers. And there's a big black market in sand because we're building so many buildings out of glass that we're literally running out of sand.
Hi, John. David Cameron here. Really enjoying Moon Underwater. Absolutely brilliant. I know you're manically busy. Doing a great job, by the way. It's bloody hard. I think the team's coping extremely well. But do you have a moment for a word? I'd love to come on the Moon Underwater. I'm on this number and V-free. All good wishes, DC.
So I think we should begin to erect the foundations of your dream pub, Emma. So you must have seen every example of every type of pub there is. When you imagine you're sort of wandering down an alley to that unexpected pub, what sort of style of pub sort of do you like, and what sort of style of pub reflects you?
I think it really varies. I always think, it, you know, the perfect pub is kind of, you should walk away from it not knowing why it was the perfect pub. You can't quite put your finger on what made it the perfect pub. And I'm not the first to say that, but, you know, that kind of idea, I don't want to walk away saying, oh, it was great beer, or it was great food, or, you know, weren't the loos really nice, or, you know, wasn't that, you know, the bar staff friendly or something. You know, I want to walk away and just go, oh, that was absolutely fantastic. And, you know, not be, I think if you can start to pick things out, then you're almost sort of saying, well, other things weren't as good. I think it should be sort of just effortless and comfortable. And when I think of some of the pubs that I feel the happiest in, there's a pub in Brighton called the Basket Makers. And it's just a little backstreet boozer. But it's got this quirkiness about it. I like a quirk in people and pubs. It's got these tins all over the wall, little like cigarette tins, coffee tins, biscuit tins, tins that you'd get like a little miniature of whiskey in or whatever. And they're all screwed to the wall. And people of Brighton, who are, you know, a creative bunch, leave messages and stuff in these tins for other drinkers to find at a later date. And so you can, you know, you can go in and you can find little poems people have written. I mean, some of it's a bit, you know, lewd, but you can find, you know, some really nice stuff. You find poems. I once found a couple of quid sellotape to a piece of paper saying, if you're absolutely skint, buy a drink with this. If you're not, put it back for a person who is. I found another one with a child's booty in it that said, we came here on the day we found we were pregnant, and today we had our daughter christened, and here's one of her first booties. You know, these things that are just, wow, you know. Sometimes you've got to open a lot of tins to get nice stuff like that. But, you know, it's fun opening the tins. And it, you know, it's just something odd and quirky. And, you know, I also love pubs that kind of engage with their local community. And I think lockdown was a great time for seeing that around pubs. Some of the pubs who really stepped up. So there's a pub in Brighton called The Bevy, and they, a community-owned pub, but one of the only, or the first anyway, community-owned pubs on a council estate in the UK. And, you know, it's a really lively, thriving, interesting place. They have a lot of regulars who rely on that place for, like, meals and things. And they just pretty much immediately, back in when everything first kicked off, they immediately started providing Meals on Wheels for free to a lot of their regulars who couldn't get out and wouldn't be able to cook a meal otherwise. And there's been so many examples of that, of pubs, you know, stepping up to the plate and doing what pubs should do, that welcoming heart of community kind of stuff, not in a kind of a twee way, but in a real, you know, getting your hands dirty kind of way. And that's kind of what I love, I guess.
I love that everything you've mentioned when I've asked you to describe what your pub looks like is actually, it's a more emotional, more community-driven spirit than actually saying, well, I want it to have this type of booth, or I want it to have this sort of bar. It shows that you truly, truly understand the heart of the pub.
But I think that is such a good point, that you kind of, when you leave a pub and you think, oh, that was a really good night, it is this indefinable thing. And it's something, I don't know, it's, yes, I often think it's something to do with, if a pub's really nice, it doesn't matter if it's busy, because it feels like everyone is part of this same kind of spirit. I think I remember, like, really good nights in Bristol were in the Hare in the Hill or the Hillgrove, and it just felt like everyone there was on the same page.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It was a very, very nice feeling of festivity and stuff.
And sometimes it's such small things that the first time I went to the Star in Oxford, it's just the fact that it's on a residential street and it should, by all logic, be a house. It's just in between these houses. And then we went in and they had a really obscure Frank Zappa album in a stack of about 60 or 80 CDs. And it's not like, it's not a heritage pub. It doesn't feel like it's 300 years old. The beer selection, like the ale selection, isn't always got something I like necessarily, but there's just something about the way the light comes in through the windows at the front on a summer afternoon that just makes you think...
In 2003.
Yeah, in 2003. Just makes you think, I will never, ever forget this pub.
Yeah.
Whereas I could go to... You know, there are pubs near me which are sort of very... For want of a better phrase, they're sort of a Nigel Farage, Boris Johnson version of what a true pub is, with Bombardier and Beams. And as much as they look like what everyone describes as their dream pub, they're not necessarily quite right. But in this unexpected pub, Emma, that doesn't know why it's so perfect and which you leave a little bit of yourself in every time you go, what are your two draft items?
Right, well, this, for a beer writer, has been incredibly difficult. So, you know, I said earlier, you know, cask ale is the only thing, really, that you can't replicate outside a pub. You know, it's a living thing. It's so magical. You know, it's got this heartbeat. It's re-fermenting in the cask underneath your feet. It's, you know, it's this thing that changes over the course of its life, you know, and you can only drink it for the first 3 or 5 days it's in the pub. I mean, you can't have that at home. You just can't, you know, not unless you're having a party and you can set up a stillage and keep it at the right temperature and everybody can drink it quickly enough. So, you know, obviously at least one of my lines had to be cask. So I've chosen Harvey's Sussex Best from, you know, just a few miles away from me over the downs, walking distance, only about 5 or 6 miles from me in Lewes. And it's just a beautiful beer. It's sort of conker brown and fruity, but also with this, Harvey's have got this amazing yeast they've had since the 50s that they just kind of crop off the top and repitch into the next batch. It's got this depth of flavour and this also this wild element to it as well. It's got a bit of a wild imposter in the yeast. And so it's just got this sort of slightly funky, slightly fruity. That pint was in the days when everybody had a you know, my usual, I'll just have my usual. That was my usual. And, you know, now, you know, beer then exploded and we now have probably 3,000 breweries in this country. But I'll still go back to a well-poured pint of Harvey's at any time of day.
So I know Harvey's Sussex Best very well. I'm very fond of it. But as a professional beer appreciator, if I were to give you three of what I would say are its tasting notes, can you tell me if I'm right?
you'll always be right because tasting notes are so individual. I mean, I think people, you know, they often think that what a beer writer does is kind of sit here tasting beer and writing tasting notes, but it's more like what you said I do around pubs. I very rarely talk about exactly what the beer tastes like. It's more about the feeling and the impression and the what it gives you. And so, what, you know, it's your mouth. Tell me your tasting notes.
It is my mouth. Well, I would say caramel,
mm-hmm.
acorn, mm-hmm. and, you know, that mixed peel that you put in sort of Christmas food. And it's like currants and sultanas and those little chunks of orange and lemon peel. I get that from Sussex Best.
Yeah, so, that's good. Yeah, you get little yellow candy peels. They remind me of the 1970s for some reason. But, I think, that sort of dark fruits, that the stone fruit, you know, dark fruits and kind of Christmas cakey, I think is, you know, yes, caramel. Yes, it probably got some caramel element to the malts. And an acorn I really like. You know, that's not a tasting note we often use because we rarely chew on an acorn, but I know what you mean.
Yeah.
You know, I know what you mean by acorn.
It's just that slight dryness.
Yeah.
Sort of woodiness.
Yeah.
That means it's not too sort of claggy. You mm-hmm. can absolutely demolish them.
Yes, absolutely.
The other special thing about cask, I mean, I might be being very naive here, but what do many other countries do cask ale in the way that Britain does?
No, they don't.
It's literally you could only get it in the UK.
It's virtually uniquely British. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a few brewers now in the States trying to recreate it, but they're trying to recreate it after recipes they've, you know, they've learned from the UK. It's not something that's developed anywhere else. It's, you know, it's something that, you know, we can rightly be proud of as British people. There's other things we might not be so proud of, but cask ale, I think we can rightly be proud of as, yeah. And I, you know, I do sometimes wonder why it's not celebrated more as in kind of Britain, British food and drink. You know, this is a unique product. It's a specialist product. It's a, you know, a loved product. You know, when brewers come from other parts of the world, you kind of think they're going to, you know, they're going to want the newest kind of, you know, massively hopped or, you know, funky ingredients or all this kind of stuff. When brewers come from other parts of the world, they don't want that. They want you to take them to a pub that does good cask ale and they want to drink that. And they, you know, revel in the fact that we do it so well, better than anywhere else on earth. And I just wish it was celebrated a little bit more and more understood as well. Yeah.
So what's your second draft choice, Emma?
So my second draft, yeah, again, I did wrestle with this. So, yeah, as I said, Harvey's was my used to be my usual in the days when I had a usual. And I suppose things changed around sort of 10 to 15 years ago with this massive explosion in the beer scene, kind of, you know, driven, you know, by this rediscovering styles that had been in the States, but also rediscovering our own heritage. And, you know, right near the beginning of that, in 2009, a brewery was set up in London, in Bermondsey, the Colonel, in a railway arch in Bermondsey. And I remember going there on what's now become the Bermondsey Beer Mile. You can go to lots of different tap rooms, direct drink direct from the brewery, a lot of small breweries. The Colonel is still there. And I remember tasting their beer and being just utterly, utterly blown away at the tastes that beer could have. I mean, I've always loved ale. I've always loved beer. You know, I've brewed my own beer. I've written about beer for ages. But, you know, this kind of, oh, my God, beer can taste like this. So anyway, I picked one of their beers. I picked their Export India Porter, which is, you know, a dark beer. I thought, well, I'll have a pale and a dark. I very nearly had two pale cask ales, but I think that's because I missed cask ale so very much over lockdown that you've become a bit obsessed with it. But I thought, no, I'm going to pick a dark. I'm going to pick it on keg, and you know, I'm going to have a nice dark, hoppy, tasty porter. You know, which is, and that porter is a heritage, based on a heritage recipe itself. You know, based on a very old recipe, and it's, you know, it speaks of London. Porter speaks of London. That was the drink of London. That's what I'd have. Perfect beer.
Wow. I'm getting ASMR vibes from you talking about beer, by the way. For goosebumps. It's great.
You should do just sort of beer writing audiobooks to help people sort of meditate.
Yeah, it's fantastic. What a great choice.
In your pub, Emma, we've got Harvey Sussex Best on cask. We've got a keg of Colonel's Export India Porter. But what are your bottled items? And I'm guessing this is going to be an interesting interpretation of bottled items from you.
Yes. One of them has my absolute heart and one of them is very, very interesting. I'll start with the one that has my heart, and that's the one I'm drinking right now, actually. I'm drinking St. Austell's Proper Job.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Which I just,
nice.
It's 5.5 in the bottle. I think it's less on cask. Now, I wrestled with myself about this because I did want it on cask, but I decided to put it in a bottle. It probably is my favourite bottled beer, and particularly favourite bottled beer that you can get quite readily in, you know, you can get it in my Tesco Express. And it's just, you know, it's, I just think it's this amazing fruity beer. It's one of the first kind of beers that really went mainstream with American hops in a very traditional brewery. You know, St. Austell is a very old traditional brewery. And it was designed by Roger Ryman, who's an incredible head brewer and a lovely, lovely man who sadly died last year, way before his time. So it has these fond memories for me of him, but also of Cornwall. Cornwall's, you know, I live in Brighton, but I love holidaying in Cornwall. You know, I'm a camper. I've got a motorhome. You know, I love just going to Cornwall. It takes my breath away every time I go there. And Proper Job reminds me of, you know, clifftop walks and sunshine and beaches and being relaxed and happy and and, you know, holidays. And in fact, the only time I've been sat inside a pub, the only time I sat inside a pub during the any of the lockdowns, you know, from last, because I'm unfortunately on the shielding list, so I haven't been able to do what I'd like to do. But I did go to a pub and sit inside once, and that was my my 50th birthday last year. It was in September, and it was at a point when the pubs were open and we were in Cornwall. I didn't expect to be on a campsite in Cornwall for my 50th birthday, but that's where we were. And I said, right, I want to go for lunch in a pub and have proper job on cask, and that's what I did. And so it's got a lot, you know, it's got a lot of memories for me and a lot of love. And you can buy it in the Tesco Express, sometimes 3 for a fiver. So, you know.
Well, I wasn't expecting to recognise so many of the drinks that you're picking. And I've had two of them, so I'm feeling quite pleased with myself. When I went to my Tesco today, just going up the beer aisle, it did make me think, when I was a kid, I remember the beer aisle was sort of lagers, and then you might get Boddington's and John Smith's, Old Peculiar and Guinness. And now they must have 100, easily 100 different beers. So we are kind of living in a golden age of availability. And so many small companies available in mainstream locations, which is really great.
It is. I mean, I'd still try and support independent bottle shops when I can. You do get so much more variety in there, but you know, not everyone's got that luxury. Not everyone lives in a town where you can, you know, access those beers. But there's still very good beers to be had in supermarkets from great breweries. Yeah.
So your second bottle, please, Emma.
Now my second bottle is something a bit different and a bit special. So there was a collaboration a few years ago between Thornbridge Brewery in Bakewell, Brooklyn Brewery, surprisingly enough, in New York, and Tom Oliver's cider. I remember Snake Bite from my youth, and I don't remember it fondly, really. This is a drink of another level. So it's called Serpent, and it was brewed. Garrett Oliver, who's the head brewer at Brooklyn, who's also the sort of messiah for food and beer pairing. You know, he's written this amazing book, The Brewmaster's Table, and very, very knowledgeable about beer tasting and how it pairs with food. So he brewed this beer with Thornbridge Brewery, who, you know, you can get their beers in some of their beers in supermarkets. Excellent brewery up in the Peak District. And they brewed this beer and then they fermented it on top of the lees from Oliver's cider. Oliver's cider is a very small cidery in Herefordshire. And the lees are kind of what's left in the barrel when the cider's fermented. So, you know, bits of apple and lots of yeast, lots of really funky wild yeast in these barrels. And they fermented it on top of that. And they created this beautiful beer in gorgeous 750ml sharing bottles, like a bottle of wine. So it's not something you'd ever get on draft, or, you know, it's not something you'd buy and just have one yourself. I remember when I tasted it, you know, I obviously taste a lot of beer. Can sometimes get a bit disillusioned with the beer scene. It's like, oh, another hazy pale, or, you know, another fruited sour. Okay, what's that one like? And this, I remember a friend brought it round to my house and I tasted it, and it was like nothing else I'd ever had. This kind of combination of the brewery and the orchard and this wildness and this, you know, almost a terroir about it, with this, it's come from these apples, it's come from these very barrels, and it's a Belgian sort of golden ale that just, but you wouldn't, if you were given it in a blind tasting, you'd probably think, I don't actually know what that is. I'm not sure what that is.
As in, you wouldn't be able to tell if it was cider or beer.
No, because it's got that cider-esque element to it. I wasn't a cider lover until that. That then became my gateway beer into cider, for definite, into real cider. I mean, that's a whole other story. Yeah, but it's got this, just these qualities that I thought I'd tasted it all, and I haven't. And there's this new exciting area to taste. And now there's, you know, there's more of these beer cider hybrids coming out. You know, I got sent one today from Wiper and True down in Bristol. You know, they've done this thing that, you know, it's a 2018 vintage, this orchard ale, they're calling it. And you know, there's a lot more of this kind of crossover happening. It's an ancient thing. It's not something that's never happened before, but it's very new to the scene now in terms of a revival of it, and the types of breweries that are engaging with it, and the types of very quality products that they're producing. So I would want that. Sadly, there's hardly any bottles of Serpent left in the world.
Well, I've just looked it up. It's 9.5%. But then you think about it, and that, well, that's a weak wine, and you should drink it like a wine. It should be appreciated like it.
Exactly, and yeah, you drink it like a wine. You drink it in wine glasses. You share it. It's, you know, it's strong for a beer, but you know, that's not how you're drinking it. Yeah.
That sounded, I mean, the way you were describing it, it reminded me of, you know, in Fantastic Mr. Fox, when they break into the cider storage, the cider cellar, and they the little foxes taste cider for the first time. It reminded me of that. But yeah, that sounds amazing. This, like, basically a new flavour you'd not tasted before.
Yeah, yeah, and not something, you know, I expect to kind of come across, really. Yeah.
Well, that finishes off your selections for the Draft and Bottles, and what a superb pub this is shaping up to be. But now, before the ad break, we head over to Robin for the Moon Underwater Pub Quiz.
Okay, everybody, pens out, eyes down, it's time for the quiz. Played for Zimbabwe, but he was born in South Africa. I know Alaska is bigger. That wasn't the question. Put your phone away. Right, Michael Jackson's Funky Monkey has been deducted 5 points.
Thank you, John. Yes, welcome to the Moon Underwater Pub Quiz. So, yes, every week I ask you, the listeners at home, and you, our guest, Emma, a few questions, and you can take part just for fun. I'm going to read out the questions now, then there'll be an advert break, and and I'll read the answers at the end. There's no pressure, there's no prizes, so don't worry about, you know, I'm not putting you on the spot. But this week, I thought I'd do a quiz about pubs. So three questions about pubs. First off, we've got question one. The Tan Hill Inn in the Yorkshire Dales is A, the UK's smallest pub, B, the UK's most haunted pub, or C, the UK's highest pub. Okay, have a think about that one. Emma's nodding her head with an air of knowledge, perhaps. Question two. The Nutshell in Bury St. Edmunds is A, the UK's smallest pub, B, the UK's most haunted pub, or C, the UK's highest pub. Same options for that question.
Good. Yeah.
Okay, good. That's the Nutshell in Bury St. Edmunds. Question three. This is the last question of the quiz. What is notable about the Ship and Shovel pub in Charing Cross, London? Is it A, it was the inspiration for George Orwell's Moon Underwater? B, it is split across two buildings? C, it is the smallest pub in London? Or D, it is Chris Rea's favourite pub? So those are your questions for this week's Moon Underwater Pub Quiz.
Great quiz. Thank you so much to the lovely Robin Allender there for this week's pub quiz. And for those of you who aren't subscribed on Patreon, you will now hear some advertisements. For those of you who are, some light relief in the form of a few ambient chords. And if you would like to sign up to Patreon to support the Moon Underwater, there are various benefits at various tiers, but every tier gains you access to the Moon Underwater Social Club Facebook page, where you can converse with other Moon Underers about some of the info we've talked about on here, your favourite pubs, and also we will post the odd snippet of fun on there. So we will see you very shortly.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back, where in the moon underwater, what a pub is taking shape. It's an unexpected pub. It's a pub that doesn't know why it's perfect. And you leave a bit of yourself in it every time you go. It's Emma Inch, celebrated beer writer's dream pub, containing thus far Harvey Sussex Best, Colonel Export India Porter, Proper Job, and a Thornbridge Brooklyn Tom Oliver mashup serpent. But before we find out what Emma is picking next, we're going to hear the answers to the pub quiz, Robin.
Thank you, John. Yes, so the first question in this week's pub quiz, which was all about pubs, was the Tan Hill Inn in the Yorkshire Dales. Is it the UK's smallest pub, most haunted pub, or the highest pub? Do you either of you know the answer to that one?
I think I know the answer to that one. I think it's... Can I say the answer?
Yes, yeah, yeah. Go for it. Yeah.
I think it's the highest. Didn't some walker turn up there recently? It was in the news, wasn't it? Somebody appeared there for some reason. You've been lost for a while or something, I think.
Oh, really?
But I think it's the highest. Is it the highest?
Yeah, you're bang right. It is the highest pub. I don't know if that... Is that the same story of that woman who joined a search party that was looking for her? I can't remember if that was...
Oh, I hope
but,
so.
But the Tan Hill Inn in the Yorkshire Dales is 1,732 feet above sea level and was named the highest pub in the British Isles. Famously, people often get snowed in there. In 2009, revelers celebrating New Year's Eve at the pub were unable to leave for 3 days following a heavy snowfall. It sounds like bliss. That's just great. Okay, question two was the Nutshell in Bury St. Edmunds. Was that the UK's smallest pub, most haunted pub, or, well, it's not the highest pub?
I've been there, so I know what that
is.
Yeah. I was taken there by the head brewer from Green King, and it's the smallest pub, isn't it?
It is the smallest pub, yeah. Wow. Yeah. So it's, what was that like? It's 15 feet by 7.
Yeah, it's I mean, it is really small. So there was me, a fellow beer writer, and this head brewer, and then I think there was a party of maybe 3 or 4 other people. The pub was full.
Yeah.
You know, that was kind of it. It's a cute little place, yeah, really sweet. Lots of, you know, stuff hanging from the walls and, you know, yeah, very cute little place. And
cool. How big's the bar? I mean, how many beers can they have on?
Well, the bar's kind of a reasonable length. It's a decent length bar. From what I remember, it was kind of decently stocked with beers and stuff. Yeah, it was good, yeah. And, you know, a few people can stand outside next to a little bench, but, yeah, it's small.
I wonder if they do a carvery. Question three was, what's notable about the Ship and Shovel in Charing Cross in London? Was it that it was an inspiration for George Orwell's Moon Underwater essay? Is it split across two buildings? Is it the smallest pub in London? Or is it Chris Rea's favourite pub?
I don't know this one.
I think I've been there.
I've been there.
I think I went there before watching Alistair Green's film at the Prince of Wales cinema. I think it's set across two buildings.
It is, yeah. So it's the only pub. I think it's the only pub where it's actually... It might even be the only building which is a registered address, but it's two separate buildings, if you see what I mean. What, the only property. So it's like you can go in on one side of the road or the other, and there's a cellar connecting the two. Yeah, it's quite a nice little pub. Well, the side I went in is. Maybe one side's nice and the other side's horrible.
So, oh, I hope so.
Yeah, but it's great. Yeah, the Ship and Shovel. Yeah, two buildings. So that thus endeth the pub quiz.
Okay, great quiz. Yet another great quiz. 100% record on good quizzes from Robin. But we now come to decide, Emma, your two spirits. Or I think we also allow liqueurs, anything sort of... anything that would be on the back shelf.
The back shelf just for birthdays, you mean?
Yes. So are you much of a spirit drinker? And if so, what are your choices?
I like some spirits. I don't often drink them when I'm out. I do kind of live by the rule of they're just for birthdays. I'm absolutely not one of those people who, someone will come up at the end of the evening and go, tequila. I have an absolute no rule. And although people will sometimes still put one in front of me, I never, ever, ever drink it. And that's, you know, years of practice have got me to this stage. But I do like spirits. You know, occasionally, you know, if it's not a night out, I might have one in a pub. And also, I like going to drinks with other people, going to pubs with other people. So I want them to have drinks that they like as well. So one of them that I've chosen is my dad. He lives in the States and he lived in Kentucky for a while. So when I went to visit him there, I got quite into bourbon. And I went to visit Maker's Mark Distillery in Loretto in Kentucky, which was an amazing experience. You know, you cannot believe that every bottle of Maker's Mark that ever produced comes from this sort of small kind of wooden building and is all hand-dipped. You know, the wax is hand-dipped. And I had a chance, opportunity to do that, went on this little tour and had an opportunity to dip my own bottle of Maker's Mark. And so, yeah, that has some nice memories for me. And, you know, if I see it in a bar, I will, you know, kind of be drawn to a little Maker's Mark. And I always have it in my cupboard at home. So I do like a bit of that. So I don't know if either of you two are bourbon drinkers.
I mean, I like whiskey, but I've never really got onto bourbon. What is the difference with bourbon? Is there?
So I think the difference is bourbon is made of rye rather than barley. I think, but someone will shout me down about that.
I've got a couple of friends who are really into their whiskies and bourbons, and we were in New York and we went to this sort of meat emporium. I'm a vegetarian, but I watched them eat these sort of incredible platters of brisket and pulled pork, and they ordered what they called a flight of whiskies. So I think they must have been like pretty hefty measures, because in America, what I love about spirits in America is they just pour what looks right. And they had a flight of bourbons, and I tried one, and as much as I have tried over the years to get into neat spirits, it's just instant heartburn. And my body is protecting me, I think, from what could lay ahead.
Do you have a bourbon with some water or with ice?
I would have one with ice. You can mix it with whatever you want. I mean, I love it with lots and lots of ice. Maybe a little drip of water is lovely. It's also the foundation of an old-fashioned cocktail. So, you know, if I was to have a cocktail somewhere, I would have an old-fashioned, kind of the basis of that. So that's, you know, got some orange and bitters flavours in there as well. So that's really nice. And, you can have it. I mean, obviously, you can have it with Coke, you know, Jack Daniels and Coke. You know, that's a infamous kind of drink that people drank at university. And I thought, how can you afford a bottle of whiskey?
Yeah.
Spending too much on beer.
The one that I was with Lloyd Langford, Ned Gamble, and the one that they really liked was called Noah's Mill Whiskey, which is a bourbon, but it is 57.5%.
Yes.
Which will take
this
your face off.
This is the nature of things, yes. Yeah.
So what's your second spirit?
My second one is local to me. There's some very good people living in Brighton, and some of those people create Brighton Gin. The story is that the founder, Kathy Caton, who actually works, she's on BBC local radio, and she also does so much good in our community, as does the company. She she wanted a gin that would perhaps not make you feel so muggy in the morning, because she likes gin, but she also likes getting up and running. And so apparently the Brighton Gin recipe is brewed with I think it's more milk thistle or something that is supposed to be somehow protective. So that, you know, they produce this gin. It's just beautifully packaged, really well presented. It's got the colours of the sort of the railings along the prom in Brighton. So it's a very distinctive sort of aqua kind of blue, the labelling and everything. As I say, they do such amazing things in our community around Pride. They produce a special gin and they raise a lot of money for Pride. And they also, during lockdown, they teamed up with a local sort of apothecary, is the word, I think, and they produced hand sanitizer. So they were selling that, but every bottle a person bought, another bottle would be donated to the NHS. So they were donating it to local NHS services, including mental health services, which I think got very overlooked in some ways during the pandemic. So, yeah, good people making a really nice drink.
I'm looking at the bottle now in my mind, obviously, because we're at the Moon Underwater where there's no internet. It's a gorgeous bottle. It looks like you would find it in a Victorian medicine chest, but not in a kind of...
Ah, yes.
Not in a twee way. It just looks like it would be in that, or on the sort of dressing table.
It looks like it might contain a tincture.
Yes, like it's that. Really nice.
That's lovely. Oh, that's interesting.
We are going to hand over to the lovely Robin because it's that time of the show where we add a publication to the Moon Underwater Library. Robin, what have you got for us this week?
Thanks, John. Yeah, so I'm interested to ask Emma, what got you into writing about beer? Because we every week we do a little pub library thing where we include a book where there's some nice writing about pubs or beer usually. But what was the thing that kind of inspired you in that direction?
I think it's a bit of a long story, really, so I'll condense it, don't worry. So I always wanted to write. That's something I've always wanted to do. I remember meeting my partner for the, you know, on our first date. She was quite forward, said she wanted a baby. I said I wanted to be a writer. So that's a bit, how's this going to work? But anyway, it kind of did. So I had another career for a very long time. And then I started, as well as my career, which is a very stressful career, I started DJing in pubs. I used to play a lot of rockabilly music in pubs. Always loved beer. Always been, you know, there's never been a time when I didn't like beer. It's always, I can't remember never liking the taste of it. But anyway, DJing, ended up getting into sort of local community radio with a rockabilly show, and then beer kind of kicked off, and I thought, oh yeah, beer, radio, beer, you know, maybe this might work. And so I had the first radio show on FM in the UK about beer. Kind of went from there. I kind of thought, actually, when I'm doing these shows, I'm writing. This is what I've always wanted to do. I started to realise that, you know, creative nonfiction was way more than what I thought it was. I've always thought I wanted to write fiction, and I still, you know, have that, you know, that novel in the back of my mind. But I realised creative nonfiction could be as beautiful and lyrical and as meaningful as that. And so I, you know, slipped down that path. And when people started paying me, I thought, I'll stay here.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Yeah, that's great. Well, I love the way that, yeah, you can bring in very nice style in writing about beer and writing about pubs. And it's very, quite literary, the way you write as well. So that's great. Which, all of which brings me on to the book. Well, it's not really a book. It's a poem for this week's pub library, which was a poem Carol Ann Duffy wrote when she was Poet Laureate. Are you familiar with this at all?
I don't know. The poem, but obviously I know Carol Ann Duffy.
It's called John Barleycorn, which is obviously a classic name for a pub. So it's a very long poem, and I'm going to read a few verses of it, but it's it mentions over 100 different pubs, which is great. So I'll just go through.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'll read a few verses. He moved through Britain, bright and dark, like ale in glass. I saw him run across the fields towards the gamekeeper, the poacher, and the blacksmith's arms. He knew the ram, the lamb, the lion and the swan, white hart, blue bull, red dragon, fox and hounds. I saw him in the three goats' heads, the black bull and dun cow, shoulder of mutton, griffin, unicorn, green man, beer born, good health, long life, John Barleycorn. I saw him festively, when people sang for victory, for love and New Year's Eve, in the raven and the bird in hand, the golden eagle, the kingfisher, the dove. I saw him grieve and mourn, a shadow at the bar, in the falcon, the marsh harrier, the sparrow hawk, the barn owl, cuckoo, heron, nightingale. A pint of bitter in the Jenny Wren for my green man, alone, forlorn, John Barleycorn. Britain's soul, as the crow flies, so flew he. I saw him in the holly bush, the yew tree, the royal oak, the ivy bush, the linden. I saw him in the forester, the woodman. He, history. I saw him in the Wellington, the Nelson, Marquis of Granby, wicked lady, bishop's finger. I saw him in the ship, the golden fleece, the flask, the railway inn, the Robin Hood, and Little John. My green man, legend strong, reborn, John Barleycorn.
Wonderful.
It's nice, isn't it? It's just
long
nice
live
to say
John Barleycorn.
Yeah, it's just nice to say all those pub names.
But it's also nice to feel that sort of inheritance, that tradition of folklore around pubs, that so often when you hear about pubs, it's either pubs are struggling, so it's bad news, or it's people are drinking too much or being antisocial, or this pub got raided or shut down. It's just so nice to actually think, no, there is, like you were saying, there is a legacy of communities and a legacy of meeting places, places where you find tradespeople places where you find support, where you make connections, and that's been going on for centuries and centuries, and it is something to be cherished.
Yeah, and it is something in all those names as well, which are a part of history, and they kind of go back, and there are all these origins of pub names. It's kind of, that's what I love about that poem.
Yeah, and if you want to learn about a town or a village or a hamlet or a city, probably the best way to learn about its history is through the pubs.
Yeah.
Especially if it's small places. I mean, most towns have a museum tucked away somewhere in someone's front room or in a community centre, but so much history is in the pubs on the street, which is what's so sad when they go.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Well, thank you for adding that to the pub library, Robin. We don't just have a library, we also have a jukebox here, Emma. And as you are double qualified to select an album for the Moon Underwater Jukebox, as a not only a beer writer, but also as a beer DJer. So what's your album of choice that you would like to hear on a pub jukebox?
Oh, yeah, so I mean, I really did struggle with this. I did, you know, I'm saying that all the time, but I have racked my soul about this because, yeah, I used to play rockabilly and vintage rhythm and blues bopper, you know, sort of really old stuff. And I thought, oh, I'm going to put something like that in there. But then I kind of thought about what pubs mean to me. And in the end, I have come up with Billy Bragg, Back to Basics. And, you know, I've always loved Billy Bragg since even before I was old enough to go to pubs. He's slightly older than me. You know, I even went to one of his, you know, online gigs during lockdown. And I think he's one of the few, one of my heroes who's maintained his integrity. I have some heroes I wouldn't want to meet, but I think Billy Bragg, I still absolutely would. And he's kind of kept this energy and this kind of faith and hope that things will get better. He's got this kind of positivity about him, and but not in a passive way. You know, he's happy to make changes, kind of thing. And I think that's kind of reflects where pubs are. You know, they've got this integrity to them. And that album, Back to Basics, it kind of collects his first two albums, Between the Walls EP, all together on one album. So it's got like love songs, Saturday Boy and Milkman of Human Kindness, and, you know, Where Do We Fall in Love? We Fall in Love with in pubs. You know, pubs are about love and meeting people and, you know, going on dates and, you know, getting excited by the possibility of love. And it also have songs that people know. So it's got Between the Wars, it's got New England. People like something that they can sing along to. But it's also, and importantly for me, it's got some political songs, some protest songs, because I think pubs are a place of protest. They're a place where protests are sometimes born, where ideas are battered about and talked about, where the seeds of change can grow. You know, I was involved in trade unions for a while, and that's where we had our best meetings and our best ideas. And, you know, if you talk to anybody about, you know, who started a new movement or something, you know, often the conversation will start with, well, we were sat in the pub and I thought that maybe X, Y or Z. And, you know, and so a lot of movements have been started there. And of course, Stonewall Inn was a pub, one of the most famous drinking venues in the world that, you know, we still hark back to when we talk about gay rights. So, yeah, Billy Bragg. I don't want to change the world. I'm not looking for a New England. I'm just looking for another girl. I don't want to change the world. I'm not looking for a New England. I'm just looking for another girl. Before we get to your final choice, I remember years ago talking on the radio show about how much I love going to the pub on my own. And we were sort of having this discussion about whether that's actually a very common thing or whether that's just me. But certainly Robin and I, we really treasure just popping out on your own and having a pub and reading the paper. And I remember a female listener emailed into the radio show and said, I would love to do that, but I can't, because for me it's a daunting experience and I get attention I don't want. And if you see a woman alone at a bar, men take that as an invitation to start a conversation that may not be wanted. And I wondered what you think the barriers are to getting more women involved in the pub industry, in brewing, in getting engaged with beer and sort of pub life, and if that was something you felt strongly about. Absolutely. And, you know, I I love a pint on my own. That is one of my luxuries. And if I'm staying in a town, which, you know, in pre-lockdown days, I was often in towns on my own, you know, working the various places. And the first thing I'll do is look what pubs are good to go to, and I'll go and explore them of an evening. But I know most women don't. I'm, you know, a big butch dyke, to be fair, you know. I've got a quiff normally at the moment. I haven't had my hair cut yet, but hence the hat. But, you know, I'm not the sort of woman who often gets approached in a pub by a man. Not often. Not for that reason, anyway. And also, I suppose I kind of feel going to the pubs is part of my work. You know, I'm learning about different places, you know. It's a lovely kind of work, but that's how I kind of frame it, I suppose, and that's how I feel comfortable going to pubs. There's some that I wouldn't go in on my own. I think in terms of beer, you know, women have been at the heart of beer for, you know, millennia. It was women were the first brewers. Women have always brewed beer, and in many societies, women are still the brewers. You know, it was always something that happened at home in the same way as making bread. The woman would make beer. And so it was only when sort of industrialization happened that it became this male domain. And unfortunately, that got more and more emphasized, you know, sort of in the second half of the 20th century, with sort of teaming up with sports and stuff like that. And when you saw sort of women represented on the TV, I remember when I was growing up, you know, women would always be drinking something else in the pub, unless they were like Minnie Caldwell or whatever in the snug at the Rover's Return, who might have a milk stout or something. Women, it wasn't a thing that women were associated with. And I think that's gradually changing. You know, lots of women work in hospitality, and it's a good career. You know, I heard you say earlier, you know, it's so sad when we hear about pubs often on the news or whatever, it's because one's closed down or it's because there's been a fight or there's, you know, something has happened. We don't hear so much about how hospitality is a good career. Let's hope in the sort of post-lockdown era, people will start to appreciate that. It's a good career choice. It's not something that is only for people who just want a stopgap while they're at university. And we should kind of encourage that, because good hospitality makes our lives worthwhile. You know, working hard all week and then getting good service at the weekend is, you know, really important. And I think it's a great career for men or for women. And I think it's about constantly sort of challenging those preconceptions of what a pub is about or what beer is about, you know, kind of gradually chipping away at that. But it's a huge history, you know, and it comes with a lot of baggage, you know, as these things tend to. It's never that easy, is it?
I don't know if you've read a book called Dublin Pub Life and Law by Kevin C. Kearns. It's sort of a history of Dublin as a pub city, and it's absolutely fascinating on the dynamics and the sort of etiquette of women in pubs, you know, from about 50 years ago to 150 years ago. And what's interesting is that there were certain women allowed in pubs who were allowed to drink stout, but they were almost defined by the fact they weren't viewed as women. So they would be sort of very, very old women or, you know, certain classes of women. But it was absolutely unthinkable that a sort of 30-year-old or 20-year-old single woman would ever set foot in a pub. And even if they would have the kids from the houses, if the mum drank Guinness, the kids would come up with pots and they would hand them through the window and the landlord would fill them up, and then the kid would go back to the house because the women weren't allowed in.
Mm-hmm. And that's not an historical thing to a lot of extent. You know, even as recently as 1982, women could be refused service at the bar. You know, they had to sit on the tables sometimes in a different bar. They weren't allowed to stand alongside men at the bar, you know, and it had to go to High Court with a couple of journalists over Elvino, I think it was called, in Fleet Street, you know, to take this pub to court to insist that women could be served at the bar. This is really recent stuff in terms of women's exclusion from pubs. And when we talk about sort of children in pubs, if we exclude children, we're to a large extent often excluding women as well, because, you know, often then the bloke will go to the pub and watch the sports. If children aren't allowed, it won't be a family thing. And, you know, I understand the arguments about some people wanting space in pubs sometimes without children. Completely understand that, but I think we need to think through those implications, that if we do stop children going to pubs, then we're often stopping women going as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm ashamed to say I didn't think of that. You know, when
it almost... Yeah, I was just about to say, we've had quite a few people at the Moon Underwater bar children from their dream pub, and I have gleefully Agreed. And I had just never considered that. So you have educated me on that point, and I'm going to bear that. I'm going to think on't. As long as there is one room where there's no children.
Yeah.
I think the secret is as well, you know, I love dogs, but I don't want dogs running riot, jumping up at my table, you know, licking my face. And in the same way, I don't want children doing the same. You know, I was always taught by my mum, if you're in an environment where people are eating and drinking, it might be their only meal out that year. It might be their anniversary. It might be their, you know, a celebration. Or they could be having a really difficult conversation, you know, that they need, you know, to be private. And so you don't blunder in as a child into those situations. You leave people be and you behave, and you don't, you know, it's a place for families, but it's not a children's playground.
So you have a wild card choice in this pub. Oh my, I'm gonna struggle to say goodbye to the unexpected pub with Harvey's Best, Colonel Export India Porter, St. Ossol's Proper Job, Thornbridge Brooklyn, Tom Oliver Serpent, with Maker's Mark and Brighton Gin. But you've got one free choice. It's anything you want, Emma.
Yeah, I have kind of taken the wild card thing kind of literally. I've gone for Negroni on tap.
Oh, nice.
Which you may not have been expecting.
Love it.
But there's a brewery in Brighton called Brighton Beer, and they've got three pubs. And I know at least they're the only pubs I have ever seen Negroni on tap. And I think there's a bit of a snobbishness about, you know, cocktails on tap. That can't quite be right.
Yeah.
But oh my goodness me. Having been the one who doesn't go on the back shelf except for, you know, high days and holidays, a Negroni on tap at the end of the evening. Goodness gracious. It's absolutely amazing. And they just sort of pour it from the tap, big chunk of ice, nice little curl of orange. And it's just a bitter sensation. And yeah, it's just great. Just great.
I am someone who, like I was saying about whiskey, I love the idea of those drinks. And I love reading about those drinks. And I love sort of literature where people drink those drinks. I went to a wedding they very kindly put us up in a hotel, and it was very fancy, and on next to the bed was a Negroni making kit, and it was just superb to look at. And I thought, right, I'm gonna be that guy. I'm gonna be Ernest Hemingway and Faulkner and Fitzgerald all rolled into one. And I made it. And I'm afraid to say it was just absolutely disgusting.
Oh, no.
But I think just because...
What's in a Negroni? What is in it?
Well, Emma, what is in the ideal Negroni?
It's gin-based, I think, with some red vermouth. So it's kind of a sort of a pinky kind of colour, pinky sort of orangey colour. And it's got bitters in it as well. And then you often have it kind of served with like a bit of orange peel, maybe a little squirt of orange juice. So it is bitter. I'm a big fan of bitter. I really am. I mean, that's what kind of, I guess that's why I'm into beer to a large extent. And a lot of the sort of juicy, hazy things, I don't mind if my beer is hazy. I don't mind if my beer is juicy, but I do like a little bit of a bitter finish. Otherwise, I find it hard to come back for more. It's like drinking a pint of orange juice, and I wouldn't really do that. I like bitter, you know, it's bitter as my outlook on life, really. I think I like.
It tastes very, I mean, this is being so disrespectful to the Negroni. It tastes a bit like earwax and like a tincture, a sort of like almost like clove oil. It's so bitter.
Yeah.
That I think the thing with a lot of those cocktails you read about, if you don't like the taste of neat gin, you will probably not like 50% of cocktails.
Yeah.
But I do know a lot of people who are very fond of a Negroni.
Oh, yeah. It's a good one. And the fact that you can get it even when the pub is busy, you know, you don't need to wait for somebody to do a little bit of, you know, shaking stuff, and they don't have to have a little grump on when you ask for a cocktail. It's just, yes, pour you a little glass.
You're barred. Speaking of people ordering cocktails in pubs, what are you going to bar from your dream pub?
So I'm going to risk sounding a bit earnest, and I'm going to cover some of the ground we covered a few minutes ago. But I want to bar bigotry and prejudice and exclusion in all its forms, which, you know, I'm sure is very easy to do. So I'm sure I can be as dewy-eyed about pubs as the next person. I can rhapsodise about them and how wonderful they are. And, you know, there's this whole kind of story of how inclusive they are, that this public house and a builder can stand next to a banker and, you know, and they can be equals there. And that's just not the full story. It's absolutely not for many, many people in our society. And, you know, we've already talked about women, you know, who feel unable to go to pubs on their own, but also thinking about queer people, you know, one of the first thoughts I have when I push open the door of a pub is, am I going to be safe? That is continues to be one of my first thoughts. And I look for signs that I might be or might not be, in terms of, you know, well, in the past, a rainbow flag, it's, you know, that's, it's kind of hard to rely on that in terms of gay stuff now, because often that means kind of support for the NHS. So, but in the past, that would be a big signal that gay people were welcome, or in terms of how the place looks, or in terms of how it's managed. You know, I've stood at the bar paying for my drink while somebody is shouting homophobic abuse in my ear, and the barman has still been asking me for my, you know, that's £3.20. That's three, you know, can you not see this? So, you know, and so I will, you know, often be quite careful. And that's true for many groups in society. I'm, because I'm now part of that sort of beer and pub scene, I don't feel that as much a lot of the time. But a lot of queer people, particularly a lot of trans people, that's a worry for them every time they go out. And that can be an exclusion from many places. And also a lot of black people, a lot of people, you know, particularly when I think about newer tap rooms, they can be in areas of towns where there's a lot of black people, or maybe a lot of working class people, a lot of all different types of people, but they're not drinking in that tap room. It's other people travelling from other places who are drinking there, and I sort of think, well, what is that about, and how, what work is that venue doing to reach out to those places? Is it just being part of the sort of general gentrification of various areas, or is it actually doing some work to make people feel welcome? And I think there's loads of work we need to do, and you know, it's not easy. And but I suppose what I would want is things like a really strong written commitment to challenging prejudice, and a commitment to follow that up, not just a written thing, but an actual seeing that we see this through. These are the actions we take when this happens. There's also a lot about just basic things, access in all its forms, like, you know, toilets. Having, you know, perhaps gender-free toilets, or at least having clean toilets, because that's what puts off a lot of women from going to a lot of pubs. You know, toilets are a mess. And having good non-alcoholic or low-alcoholic options, and reaching out to kind of underrepresented groups. So, yes, I do sound very earnest.
Well, no, it's good that you say that, because most people just say screens.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, now I know most people do. Maybe that's what I should have said, but I haven't. I've said bigotry in all its forms, and I've, you know, hung myself with it. But, you know, that's I think, you know, as a pub lover, I know I don't have the full story about it. And unfortunately, I think the stories we tell about pubs have often been written by one group in society, and perhaps those stories need to be written by others.
My friend who I used to live with is non-binary, and, you know, I texted them one night, say, oh, do you want to come, we're all down the pub, and they said, oh, well, what are the toilet situations like? And I thought, oh my God, that's something that you have to think about mm-hmm. every time you go out.
Every single time, yeah.
You know, really brought it home how challenging that can be for something. It's something we take for granted so much mm-hmm. as well. You know.
Absolutely.
I'm so guilty of that privilege, because I was sort of soliloquizing earlier about the history of pubs in the community, but they've actually only been a community for white men. So for you know, 1,000 years to sort of revel in what an important resource pubs are for towns. Well, they're important for the white men in those towns, and it is a responsibility of this new wave of enthusiasm for brewing to also represent the generation that has brought through that enthusiasm in making sure that no one is excluded from those pubs and from those beers, or and made to feel that the pub or the tap room is not for them. And I think that's
mm-hmm.
I think absolutely, it's the best yeah. barring we've thus had. And you
so if you could just sort that out. Yeah.
You'd have to go. I don't think it'll ever be topped. I don't think someone will say dogs. And I'll go, actually, that's better than Emma Inch's bigotry, prejudice and exclusion.
Hurry up, please. It's time.
I definitely want to come to this pub now. It's superb. It's got Negroni on tap, but what it doesn't have yet is a name.
Okay, so lockdown's been pretty hard, or was pretty hard. And as I said, I was a shielding person. My partner's a doctor. We have an eight-year-old daughter. Everyone's lockdown was hard in different ways, but we had these number of different challenges. And although it's been an absolute joy to have a child with us, it's also been a bit of a challenge in keeping her occupied for months and months on end. And, you know, she's as much of a pub lover as I am. So, you know, throughout the kind of the whole, you know, year and a bit or whatever it's been, we've had, you know, as well as the Christmas in December, we had a Christmas in June, we had a Halloween party in April, we had a dinosaur theme weekend, we had all these things where we had to get dressed up and do weird things. But one of the things we enjoyed most was creating a beer garden in the garden. And, you know, initially it was just for us, but in the little point where we could have other people around, we invited people around to our pub. We kind of upgraded a little bit. We got a gazebo as it came into autumn 2020. And so we got this gazebo. We could have some of the sides open. We got heaters. We got little fairy lights going around it. And my daughter loved making a little menu. You know, one of the things she's missed from pubs, I keep saying, what do you miss then? What is it? She's like, the chips. I just want the chips. And, we have chips at home, yeah, but the ones in the pub are so much better. So she made this little menu of what people could choose from. And we made these prices that went down the side, which were ridiculous, you know. Burger and chips, £17. Apple juice, 5p. So we had all these, you know, these beautiful menus we printed. And, you know, so I said to her, well, we've got to have a name for our, you know, our gazebo pub beer garden thing. And without hesitation, she just said, well, it's called the Blue Fox. I've no idea where she got that from. And I even Googled it, that I can't see any other pubs in the UK called the Blue Fox. So my pub will obviously be called the Blue Fox. What else would it be called?
That's brilliant.
Oh, what a wonderful origin story of your pub's name. Oh, man, I want to go there right now. And I'll have a pint of Sussex Best. Then I will try a bit of the porter.
Try. You can have a little third.
Then I'll have a half of the proper job.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm going to have...
And a bottle of gin.
Well, no, I want to have like a third of the serpent.
You
because
must, yeah.
It just sounds so magical. It sounds like the sort of thing they might drink in His Dark Materials.
Oh, yes, yes.
That might be their drink in the parallel realm.
It is definitely a parallel realm kind of drink, yeah.
And all that whilst suffering no bigotry, prejudice or exclusion with Billy Bragg on the jukebox. Emma Inch, thank you so much for joining us to create this pub. It's been a delight talking to you.
Oh, it's been lovely, thank you.
And I would recommend everyone to go to fermentationonline.com to read about everything Emma does and to read some wonderful examples of your writing. And it just remains for us to bid you farewell into the vast unending night with Billy Bragg playing. And I think it's right that you select a track from that album, perhaps one of the protest songs that might give you a feel of what your pub would be like to be in.
One of the ones that sticks with me that could have been written yesterday is It Says Here, which is about our national press. You know, those who own the papers also own this land, one of the lines from it. And I guess that kind of, it's not a giving up song. It's a, you know, let's keep trying to make the world a better place. You know, we can make different choices. We can support each other. I guess that would be... a song to send me off into the night.
Well, let's play it now as you head off with the Blue Fox under your arm to take with you wherever you go. Thank you to beer writer and podcaster Emma Inch.
It says here that the unions will never learn. It says here that the economy's on the upturn. And it says here...
And as we watch Emma... walking down the street, I can already see her taking out her notebook and pen to think of more ideas for her next fantastic column. So please do check out Emma's writing. It is superb. But now I must, I'm afraid, call time at the bar. And it's time to wend our way back into the other realm. But next week, we will be welcoming Chaser, the vixen, the one, the only Jenny Ryan. So we're very excited to have her here at The Moon Underwater. Head to patreon.com/moonunderpod. Head to Dry Drinker with the code moonunderpod and head to yourself in a way. That's part of the whole quandary, isn't it? And we will be back very soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.